Díomh Galair agus Fáilte, hello, you are very welcome to Adapt Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Claire O'Connell, and today we're talking about how AI can help to protect and boost the Irish language.
From the Adapt Centre at Trinity College, this is Adapt Radio, presenting groundbreaking innovations one conversation at a time.
The Irish language is an important part of Ireland's culture, but it is a minority language. And like many minority and at-risk languages around the world, Ireland needs to be protected. Joining us today to talk about this are two experts from the ADAPT Centre. Dr. Abigail Walsh is a postdoctoral researcher and Gráinne Caulfield is a research assistant. They are both at Dublin City University and they're both working on technology to improve the machine translation of the Irish language and to help protect the language into the future. Abigail and Gráinne, so Fáilte Rov, you're both very welcome to the programme.
You're really liked.
Abigail, can you put us in the picture about the Irish language, why it might be at risk and the cultural moves in recent years to protect it?
Certainly. So the Irish language, as many of you know, is the official language of Ireland. And as such, all documents and official signposts, everything needs to be translated into Irish. But outside of, say, an official capacity, Irish is actually a minority language. It is spoken daily by a small number of the Irish population and would be used in school settings. But outside of that, it is not used by the majority of the population of Ireland. So as such, it's an interesting minority language. Oftentimes, minority languages are not well protected by the government. So Irish is in a unique position. However, from, you know, the decline it's seen in speakers over the years, that just means that there are not so many people using Irish language. And as such, the demand for technology in Irish is not as high as it would be for English, obviously. So that just means that the tools and technologies haven't been developed for Irish as they should be.
And how can technologies like AI and machine learning help to protect and even nurture these minority or at-risk languages?
So technology isn't, you know, something in a vacuum. It's a tool that people use to use their language. And it's interesting now, technology is sort of the medium in which we all communicate. So we're very often existing in a digital space. In fact, Gráinne, I think you mentioned something before about how our lives have become sort of very digital. So we expect to be able to interact in these spaces in the language that we use. And for a minority language like Irish, that means there just needs to be more support given, more development for these tools to function as they do in English. So at the very base of that, with every language technology, there's always this need for data, which can be used then to build these systems. So the question was, how can we, you know, support these languages? How can we advance them in the space? And the answer is very often, it starts with collecting those resources, those data resources.
And Gráinne, that's something you're working on as well. You work on the eStore project. Can you tell us what that's about?
Yeah, so the eStore project, it's a project funded by the Department of the Gaeltacht, Culture, Arts, Sport. It seems to do everything in there. And basically what it is, well, my job is I'm mostly outreach. I'm aiming people and I'm looking for publicly available data, nothing with personal data in it, so that it can get uploaded to our repository, to eStore, our website, and that so that it can be used possibly, say, within DCU for the benefit of DCU researchers, or depending on the licensing and depending on the sharing levels provided by the data holder, that it will go on then to the European Commission to improve their translation platform that they've created called eTranslation. So the reason that we need to ask people themselves to upload this data, which can be you know, inconvenience for people because people have enough to be at, they have enough on their plate at work, is because it's because of GDPR, we cannot, even though it's kind of counterintuitive that the data is publicly available, but we can't go take it and upload it ourselves. We have to get these specific permissions from people. So the data holder themselves has to upload the data. So we'd be mostly looking at, you know, these governmental organizations, the departments, as Abigail mentioned, like most official documentation has to be translated into Irish, so that there are versions of, there are English versions and Irish versions of these documents out there. It's kind of the idea of why not kind of recycle those documents. People don't realize that this translated material is valuable. It's still valuable when, you know, when whatever it is, the campaign's over, the annual report is submitted, whatever it is. So it's still valuable. It can get uploaded to our repository to help support and improve and create Irish language technology.
So you mentioned there things like campaigns, annual reports. What other kinds of documents might you be getting sent to put on the platform?
Anything at all, basically, we'll take, as long as it's publicly available, as long as there's no personal data in it, we'll take it. So it's those annual reports, there's press releases, there's newsletters, any sort of marketing leaflets, anything that's been translated into Irish, we'll take, basically. Yeah.
Very good. What kind of volume of data do you have at the moment on the platform? How big is it?
To be honest, at the minute, I wouldn't have the numbers because it depends on how we measure it. It got changed there from measuring each individual document to each, I think it's language unit now, because there can be a lot of language units within a document. And you can get loads of documents from someone, but there could be very little within the documents, you know, so.
Sure. That's interesting that you've kind of gone from one document to almost like parsing the information in the document so that it's, there's a more like systematic way of looking at these documents as a whole. Is that the idea behind that?
Exactly. Yeah, that they can be measured more kind of, you know, because you can get a lot of documents, say, from one organization or one person or whatever it is, and they can be very sparse, or say there's lots of things with the data management and the data processing of it, that if a document is full of images and there's text within the image, that text cannot be pulled by the software. So there could be a lot of text within a document, but it's just not usable at all. So then, you know, you have that document, but and you could technically count that document that you have it, but it's not fully truthful. So it's a more truthful thing to say how many language units you have, you know.
Right. So, right. Okay, fair enough. So that's more of a reflection of the richness of the database than potentially these kind of more or less functionally empty documents.
Yeah, I just checked on the website there. We have 279 data sets and 61 publishers, it says, so.
And so you have all the data on the platform. And when you have the data, what do you do with it?
So that depends on the type of permissions that we get from the data holder. So it has to be processed and validated on our side. Basically, just go through it. Is there any personal data in it? Does the description and the title match the document itself? Is it a PDF? PDFs are really, really hard to process. We will accept them if there's nothing in jail, if it's the difference between giving a document and not giving a document, you know, we'd rather the PDF. But PDF is just really, really hard to process in terms of data processing and management. So we're checking all that. And then when all of that gets validated or properly checked, it'll get processed and validated on our website. And then after that, it depends on the permissions given to us by the data holder. So it's very possible that it'll just stay within our repository, within our store on our website, or we could have permission from the data holder, which is the most ideal thing, that it will then get sent on the ELRC, that's the name of the website, that it'll get sent on to the European Commission and added to their repository, and then it'll be used to help improve that e-translation service, because right now I'd say that service is it's a very reliable service in terms of very formal kind of legal texts, because it's based on mostly European legislation that's been translated into Irish, and that's the database that it was, or the kind of benchmark that it was built on. But the idea of our project is that more different types of data will be fed into that system, so it could become much more reliable service, and that you get more reliable outputs from it with a bigger variety of inputs.
And can you tell me about the way that you are improving machine translation of the Irish language? I think, Abigail, you were working on natural language processing, or NLP. Can you tell me what that is?
Sure. So natural language processing is, as the name suggests, processing of natural languages. So the languages that we speak. And processing is a very broad term. So essentially that means how to treat a language in the context of computing and technology. So it covers a lot of, it's a broad spectrum. Where I work is more on the beginning, say, of the pipeline, where you're dealing with the text in its kind of raw form. So if we imagine that language is in its most raw form, it's spoken, but then we write it down as a means of capturing language, and then that text can then be processed and used. So we interact with a lot of our technology through the means of text. So when it's first written down, you know, it might be typed into a Word document, it might be posted on the internet, it might be in a PDF. So it's in these different formats, and then we take those and then we try and like normalize them into something that is machine readable, and then maybe process that a little bit further. So I was looking at, say, multi-word expressions are these idiosyncratic features of language. So anytime you have idioms or phrasal verbs, so letting the cat out of the bag, we're not actually talking about cats usually, we're talking about secrets. So it's the sense that language can be used in this very fluid and sort of metaphorical sense. So that might require special treatment, perhaps tagging that type of language and focusing in on it. And then further down the line, maybe you want to translate the text. So you pass it into a machine translation system, and then that will predict its best guess at what the outcome should be. And then perhaps that then is then passed on to something else. So natural language processing just refers to any moment in that pipeline where we're trying to deal with the language. And machine translation is, of course, a very widely recognized part of that system. It's a very useful tool to have, because that's oftentimes what we're trying to do with text, is trying to understand it when it's written in a different language. And machine translation as a field has come a long way. I think it started with more rule-based systems in the 80s and 90s, and then moved on to statistical machine translation, where you were trying to predict patterns of behavior based on what had occurred in the data up until now. And then we move to neural models, which are very complicated, like thousands of weights and connections between all these different layers, where it's actually quite interesting the patterns that it picks up on. So we're no longer telling the machine to look for specific patterns, it's learning those themselves. You know, very, very advanced models, very impressive results, but they require a lot of data to run. And so that's where then the low resource languages have to kind of bolster their data supply or find more clever ways of compensating for the lack of data so that they can build these impressive neural translation models.
And this is where the likes of eStore comes in, where you're able to source the data and manage it in a way that helps to improve that machine translation. Can I ask you about the Irish language itself? Is astonishingly rich in idiom, in phrases that when they're translated into other languages can come across a little bit, you use the example of letting the cat out of the bag. The Irish is riddled with those kinds of things. And even in terms of its structure, its the vocabulary, it's quite different to a lot of other European languages. How does machine translation cope with that?
Well, it really it depends on what the medium is. So, of course, Irish language is structurally very different from English. And I'm using English because it's a majority language. It's very well supported and actually is used in a lot of machine translation systems as being one side of the equation, because you're usually trying to translate in or out of English. So just in that context, obviously, Irish is it's its own different language. It can present then problems. The neural models actually are quite sophisticated at picking up on these different structures of the language, but it does lead to some strange occurrences. So something that the neural models can do is hallucinate. So they kind of generate something based on what they've seen before, which is not at all in the, say, in one side of the text. So it can generate some very strange things. And I found I was looking at machine translation of idiomatic expressions. And I think possibly because they're so infrequent in the data. Like, yes, you said that Irish is riddled with these expressions, but they all occur quite low frequently. Like, you actually don't use the expression "let the cat out of the bag" very frequently, typically. So the data is maybe exhibiting maybe two or three of these, and the machine translation system might not be picking up on what they mean. So it can generate something very strange. It can like completely change that. It might say to let the dog out of the car instead, you know, like something completely different. And so how to compensate for that is actually a very interesting and kind of a tricky question. It's a bit of an ongoing open question in NLP at the moment, although as the data kind of increases, these questions become a little bit less contentious because it kind of figures it out from all the data. You know, if it's got enough examples, it can kind of do something with that. But it's you see it more the case with these low resource languages where it might throw something absolutely mad out there. So that's where, yeah, these data collections are very important, and particularly for a language as rich. And so something interesting about Irish is that the verbs that we use, we tend to use these very simple verbs very frequently. And then through context, we determine the meaning. So the verb ca can mean like so many different things depending on its context. So it's actually very, very important that we have enough text that the systems can learn all the various shades of meaning of this verb.
Yeah, so it could be throw, it could be spend, could be whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah, whatever, yeah. Whatever works. And also even thinking about the way that things are phrased in Irish as well. You say ta ah hazaram, happiness is on me, which again, if you translate that directly into another language, probably sounds a bit strange. So yeah, I'm sure. So it's brilliant that you're getting more and more data to be able to help the algorithms, the software to learn how to do this. What about the spoken language? Ireland has a very long tradition of spoken Irish. Is there any way of capturing that, or is that something that people are working on at the moment?
So actually there's a team at Trinity who work on the ABER initiative, and they do fantastic work there with speech processing, which is where we're working on the text side of things. They're working on the spoken side of things. And they have this platform where there's all of these different tools available. They have screen readers and speech to text programs that are available for use, and they're particularly helpful for in the case of say students with special learning needs who might require these screen readers or speech to text systems for, you know, in engaging in their classroom content, because so much is digital these days. I highly recommend you check out their work. It's very interesting. They've spent years developing these models, and they're very sophisticated with a lot of different dialects. Grania, were you actually recording for them?
I was just thinking about that down at the Oireachtas down in Killarney in November, the big Irish festival. Went into like their recording booth and recorded like 100 sentences for them. So that they could have that. I mean, Abigail, you have all the language for this. I have no idea what you call it, but I suppose that they'd be able to then reproduce that and have different sentences in different dialects and different pronunciations and everything. Because I don't know, I wasn't sure if I was any good to them, because I'd say my accent now is so mixed up between the Gaeltacht in college, and like I've adopted so many different things. And then I was also, I think it's an interesting case. And I was also always taught the Caidón. So then in Monaghan, so I wouldn't have an Ulster dialect. I really didn't come across the Ulster dialect until I went to Dublin, which was hilarious.
That's funny. Yeah. I think that's the thing. You know, in school, we learn what's called the Caidón, which is the standard Irish. But of course, where Irish flourishes sort of on a day-to-day basis can sound quite different depending on where you are. You might be in Donegal, or you might be in Galway, or you might be in Kerry. And the words and the sentences sound very, very different in those places. So it's in a remarkably rich data set to work on, I'm sure.
And yeah, actually, even to add to that, those are the differences then that are present in speech data. So you imagine you have to collect not just instances of the Caidón, but all of the different Blasanna. So, you know, you want to make sure Munster Irish is represented in Connemara Irish and Donegal Irish. And it is kind of the case as well with NLP, with the text side of things. You might have different grammatical freight, like ways of structuring things, or different vocab words. I think it's more of an issue in the text, but it does kind of illustrate, I guess, the importance of, it's not just data from one particular source we're looking for. We need data from all these different dialects, all these different regions, some sort of, you know, regional specific idioms that might occur, because they're, well, if you want the system to be able to handle them when they come in, you need to have that support then in the data. So I just use as an example, like, I don't know if any of you have ever tried using any of those Alexa systems or something. For whatever reason, they can understand my dad's Kerry accent. That doesn't cause them problems. But my mom, she has this lovely Galway accent, but it doesn't know what she's saying half the time. So
really,
my dad That's always teases her. He's like, yeah, your addiction's no good. And I'm like, Dad, hers is a lot better than yours. I don't know.
So maybe she was trained on Kerry Irish or something.
Whatever.
We get to Galway stuff at all. That's so funny. But it's really encouraging to hear that this kind of research and this kind of data collection can help to protect that richness. That even in a small country like Ireland, where we have that really rich and vibrant language. Do you know of any other examples around the world where people are doing similar work or have done similar work to protect languages that were at risk because they were becoming minoritized?
Again, Abigail, I think you know more about this, but I think it's the case of even Welsh now, that was very much a minority language. And I know it's still a minority language, but it's on the up now. It's had its come up.
It's
glow up, as the kids say nowadays. So
it's a fascinating kind of case study in how you can support a language both at, it was a grassroots initiative, but also a top-down initiative where the government were really invested in preserving the language in the particular parts of Wales where it was spoken. And it's fantastic to see the resurgence. I was in Aberystwyth there a couple of years back, and just everywhere, you know, you see it on the road signs like you would in Ireland, but also all of the shop signs are in Welsh. And when you walk into a shop, people greet you in Welsh. And then if you respond in English, they'll get back to you in English. But the assumption is that you're there in the Welsh speaking area, that you're using Welsh language. And, you know, I learned a few like little phrases and everything. And, you know, it's not hard to pick up. But there is a real attitude permeating that those spaces where they were really proud of their language, and they were really proud to defend their, you know, their heritage and their ability to speak. Now, there's pushback from other parts of the country where they were like, it's a bit ridiculous to invest all this money in a language no one speaks. But when people speak it, then, you know, you can't really deny the results. So it'd be great if Ireland could take a leaf out of the Welsh book there.
And I suppose as people want to engage more with the language, the technology needs to be good enough to enable them to do that. And that's where you guys come in.
I mean, like Abigail was saying earlier, like so much of life is online now. The lines are kind of blurry. It's so enmeshed now that it's gone to the stage of people spend so much time online. If they want to be able to use Irish, they have to have the opportunity to be able to use Irish. And online is a very, very important part of that now. And it's like the way if you try and say my name's Grania, and like loads of things can't handle the fada when I put in forms, and it's like put in a proper name. I think it just goes back to that the data isn't there, the resources aren't there. Like it's a project like eStore that will create that kind of foundation for this kind of technology to be created and for Irish online to be supported.
And can the Irish diaspora, the people who maybe live outside of Ireland now around the world, how can they support this effort to try and get more Irish out there so that AI and machine learning can become better and better?
Yeah, well, I suppose it is the diaspora. It's them who probably be using it the most, possibly online. Like I know myself that when I was living in France, and I think this is a general kind of feeling that people have when they go abroad, that they feel those kind of connections to their home country, whatever it is, a lot stronger, because it's not something that not take for granted, but you know what I mean? Like it's something that it's just not immediately around them anymore. So they want to foster that a bit more within themselves and within their kind of, I suppose, like immediate surroundings maybe. And that is their phone, or that is their online world. So it would most likely, it'd be them using and engaging with the technology possibly. And it's kind of showing, I suppose, to these platforms as well, showing to Twitter or X and TikTok and all, that it is an alive language within their their apps, and that it is something that needs to be supported by the company on a larger scale.
And on social media too, you know, you mentioned there the likes of X and TikTok, etc. Obviously, this is, well, TikTok is where a lot of young people are. So again, would you hope that as the technology becomes more available for Irish and machine translation, that we'll see more sort of acceptance and pickup by young people on these platforms?
Exactly. The idea is that it becomes easier and easier to use online, but it's increasing that accessibility to it online, so that there's just generally less of a barrier, kind of, I suppose, less of an excuse to not use it, that it becomes more kind of at an equal level to English. I mean, is it ever going to have the same amount of language data that English has online to be working on? I'm somewhat doubtful of that, but that doesn't mean there can't be enough or sufficient amount for it to be satisfactory to, you know, and to be able to use it successfully and easily online. What do you think about that, Abigail?
Yeah, I was going to say as well, it's a bit of a, you know, a chicken egg situation, where if people are using it online more, then there's more data then that you can use to improve systems. So like spaces like X, where people have been engaging actually in posting in Irish and all over the world, it's not just in Ireland. That kind of text is actually, it's a bit different than, say, your legal documents. So it can be a bit tricky to process it. You know, they'll be using some kind of funky things like a lot of code switching, and then like using emojis and characters and really creative stuff. It's actually very interesting. There was a colleague of mine, Lauren Kessler, who was doing her work on that data. But then as you improve the tools for handling that, then, you know, people can use the language a bit more, and, you know, you don't get this like translated into like Polish, Aramaic, like, just randomly guesses at what you're trying to say. And you're like, no, there's maybe one word there that another language hasn't come. So yeah, it just kind of validates your use of language online. Like, this is a space where you can use your language and you're not a weirdo for using this language. And then, you know, the more data we have, then the better the tools can be in the end. So it's great. It's a circle kind of.
And even, I suppose, it contributes to, you know, the government's goals for 20% of the workforce to be able, I'm not sure there's specifics of it, but to be able to speak Irish at least competently. I'm not sure fluently. You know, the difference between that, I don't know, we could argue that, but that it goes back to that thing of people need opportunities to be able to use it. And if your life is online, if you're trying to write an email on Gmail, Ask Gaeilge, and just everything's getting underlined all the time and Gmail is just completely lost with it, do you know, that kind of thing, the actual practicalities of day-to-day life and using it in a workplace setting, that can be, I suppose, facilitated a bit more.
Yes, absolutely. And make FADAs easier to use, please. Yeah. The FADA, for anybody who's not familiar with it, is like the acute accent in French. And it's a very important part of the Irish language, because it can change the meaning of a word instantly if you have a FADA on it. Well, thank you for the work you're doing, because it sounds like you're definitely putting the Irish language data on the map, so that there is no excuse for the machine translation not to get better and better. So if I were on X now, I would say GRMA, which is Gurmagud. Thank you both.
And Goa for LOL. So.
Well, there's been lots of Gaira here, and Gurmila Magav, Dr. Abigail Walsh, and Grania Caulfield, thank you so much for joining us today.
Gurmila Magav.
Gurmila Magav.
And if you'd like to find out more about Abigail and Grania's work on using technology to protect the Irish language, I've put some links into the show notes, so please do go and check them out. To get new episodes of Adapt Radio automatically, just click the follow button on your player. And until next time, for myself, Claire O'Connell, Slán, and thank you for listening.
The Adapt Radio podcast is brought to you by the Adapt Centre at Trinity College Dublin. Find out more about their extensive research work at adaptcentre.ie. Join us next time to hear about more groundbreaking innovations. To get new episodes automatically, just click the follow button on your player right now. The Adapt Radio podcast is produced by dustpod.io, with episodes monthly on Apple, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.